serving up the champagne. Pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up. Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
And we're underway on a Friday. Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Glad you're with us. It is Gibbs, Gribbs, and the Glue.
Yeah.
Matt Wilhelm, back.
We're back. I'm sticky again.
Sticky.
Well, I ran out of tack.
Keep that to yourself.
Greasy again.
Oh, and we are with you till 3 o'clock today here on ESPN 850 WKNR. Once again, a very busy day in Berea. A lot of people in the building coming and going.
A lot of foot traffic.
Uh-oh.
Again. I said a lot of foot traffic
going on. You know, I had mic 4 up. I was ready to go, and at the last minute, Gribbs grabbed mic number 3.
I'd like to keep you on your toes here.
There is a lot of foot traffic. A lot of things going on in the building as we inch our way closer to draft day 2016. Mr. Wilhelm, how are you today?
I cannot complain, and I think it's exciting for me. And I've said this before, just playing this role on this side of the business after always being a player and only seeing things one way, to be able to be up here essentially in a glass room, to be able to see all the business, you know, a buzz around us from the PR side to the football side, Renee Harvey and the foundation side. It's an exciting place to be. And I guess I'll throw this out for anybody. Do you think that right now that these players are going from visit to visit to visit, or are the Browns ahead of the curve, you know, 30 days in advance, so that by, I don't know, 2 weeks from now, that draft board is set and there's just minor tweaks and it really allows them to, the upper echelon side of their draft board is set and it allows them to really tweak and find those diamonds in the rough, you know, with those compensatory picks later in some rounds.
I'm starting to wonder, too, how much it matters. We're comparing to last year, how much the difference between the 12th pick and the second pick is in terms of how you handle your business visit-wise. Yeah. Because I think it's – I'm definitely noticing, just based on reports with other teams and with these top players, it just seems like the Browns are getting through these top players in the draft pretty early.
Right.
And kind of getting them in almost in bulk, you would say, and kind of going through it – through it that way, and maybe that's a different strategy than in the past. I would think it can't hurt to get this done with earlier than later in the process, because now this is draft month. You've got we're 4 weeks from day two.
It's they today. Are.
So
it's,
I mean, this is it's really coming down the stretch here. So I think I think this shows you, one, the board is always in flux, and that these are kind of the final fine tuning moments, and two, it's just it's close, but I still think there's a lot of work to be
done.
And
I think that they are who they are. They've showcased their ability in skivvies, you know, at the combine, at their, you know, in a controlled environment by the NFL, in a controlled environment, you know, by their university or themselves to showcase that. They've come in, they can meet with the teams. And I guess as a coach or general manager, you're going to suck as much information, you know, out of these brains to give you a synopsis of who they are and what they can handle and if they fit. And then you're kind of done. You know, unless they injure themselves and that gets reported somehow, you know, via social media, or they get in some type of off the field trouble. I would imagine it'd probably be a refreshing feeling to go, hey, a majority of our work is done now. And then I think that's the meeting of the minds then start. And Andrew Berry and the Dee Podesta report and the Sashi Brown report and the Hugh Jackson report and maybe some of the assistant coaches all report on groups of players. And you start filtering through, you know, individual reports on these players. And then, again, Sashi Brown spits out a name on what, April 28th?
I think the best part is that, you know, the reports are out there that the Browns have brought in a number of the big names. I think it's great that they're doing that. We can talk about diamonds in the rough. We can talk about guys in the 5th, 6th, 7th rounds. We can talk about guys in the 3rd and 4th rounds, whatever. You got to hit on the first
one. Oh, yeah.
And you got to hit on number 32 as well.
And the names that are making fans happy seems like a lot of offense. A lot of offense in the building. And I think that anytime it seems like fans get really excited about two positions, quarterback and wide receiver. And certainly there's been a lot of those names linked to the Browns in the last week.
But share your statistic that you shared with us prior to jumping. I know you just said a lot of offensive names, and I'm intrigued by the offensive needs. I'm in favor, as we had the mock draft earlier this week that you and I discussed, with the Browns going quarterback, receiver. I like that. But the fact that you just threw out is what?
Well, I'm doing kind of a defensive-focused numbers breakdown, because I think this has been a week where maybe since we talked about Jalen Ramsey, we've talked about other players, but maybe a defensive shift among the fan base in terms of what you're looking for at that number two pick. But since 2006, the last 10 drafts, 18 of the players in the top five have been defensive players. 11 of those are Pro Bowl players, or have been to at least one Pro Bowl and are going to be back at some more. I mean, there's been some great defensive players taken in the top five. So about 7 of them haven't exactly panned out. You count one, a couple of those. I think Clowney, we maybe think, is going to be a Pro Bowl player eventually. And then Dante Fowler hasn't played a snap yet in the NFL because of the torn ACL.
Correct.
So those are the two that are still in flux. I would say the 5 or 6 that have not made the Pro Bowl probably aren't going to make the Pro Bowl anytime
right.
soon. But the a lot of guys, like a Patrick Peterson, the guy's going to be going every year. There's Ndamukong Suh. He's a regular guy. I mean, these are powerhouse, cornerstone kind of players. So I have to compare that to offense, but I would say the ratio, it at least in the last 10 years, you've had maybe more bang for your buck with the if you go defense in the top five. But again, it's all going to be about fit and what they think is the best available for the Browns at that number two pick.
So much being made of that number two pick, guys, and obviously we can talk about that today, and we will talk about it today. You know, we started talking about DeForest Buckner, speaking of defensive players, a guy that would fit this defensive scheme quite nicely.
Yeah.
Maybe someone that's not on the radar of a lot of people with all the offense and quarterback talk, and we'll get to him. But we also want to talk about today pick number 32. And what the Browns should do with it. We want to know what you want to do with it. Do you want to trade up? Do you want to trade back? Do you want to trade it to begin with? Or do you take someone at that 32 pick, which is essentially a second first-round pick that
right.
you now have in your possession if you're the Cleveland
and
Browns?
And do you believe, and I mentioned earlier just going quarterback, wide receiver, that what you do at 2 says what you do at 32 or has some type of weight in what you do at 32?
I would only say maybe in that I would say I think if you go defense at number 2, I would be then surprised if you go defense at number 32
okay.
again.
Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if you go offense at number 2 and offense again at 32, if that makes sense. So
it does.
I think with one of the two picks you're probably going to go offense. I would just be surprised if you go double defense early.
Got
you. But I think you could make an argument for double defense based on what we saw defensively from the Browns last year. You look at the losses on defense with you're losing Dansby to Sean Gibson. Both those guys
yep.
are gone. Joe Hayden's injured right now. You maybe don't know how ready he is. You could make the argument for double defense 2 and 32. So, but I would be surprised if that happened.
You got to get playmakers.
Yes, you do.
Hugh Jackson talks about playmakers. And right now, you are a little thin at that playmaker position on this team.
If they went O-line, D-line – at 2 and 32, do you think we'd see torches and pitchfork outside of Berea?
I think we might want to start setting up the inflatable things for people when they jump off of the 480 bridge in mass quantity.
You could go Laramie Tunsil at 2.
100 or DeForest
right?
Buckner.
Or DeForest Buckner, right?
And then get your starting right tackle at 32, maybe.
Hey, I don't want that, but you could very easily go that direction.
Yeah.
I mean, let's all remember 2014. I don't think Joel Bitonio was the most popular pick with the fan base in that second round.
And you love him now.
Yeah, he's turned into a very good player.
You can even go back further with Mitchell Schwartz. Mitchell Schwartz was taken in that second round. People lost their minds with the number of offensive players that were on the board at that time, and they come away with Schwartz, and you were like, what the heck are you doing?
Just a four-year starter that never missed a game.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it'll be very interesting. The one thing I'll say is the Browns – the one thing they do very well year in and year out, no matter who's in the front office or who's on the coaching staff, they do a great job of disguising what the heck they are going to do because we are totally – with the number of guys that are in and out of this building and the number of positions and everything else, you're just going, huh, I didn't see that one coming.
Right.
That's why the last few years, if we go back and look, I don't think there was this much maybe up in the air with the number two pick. Like we all knew Mary – Titans fans could order their Mariota jerseys weeks
right
in
now.
Advance
yeah.
sure.
With the number two pick last year. And I just don't think it's reached that point. And I don't know if it ever will, if we're going to start seeing reports out of these national guys getting. But even that time, you wonder if they're getting steered one way to kind of smokescreen another team. It's all part of the game.
Coming up today on the show in about 5 minutes from now, Eric Hansen, Notre Dame beat writer for the South Bend Tribune and co-host for Budweiser's weekday sports beat on WSBT Radio in South Bend, will join us. Notre Dame's Pro Day was yesterday. Number of different players there and a couple former Irish that took part in Notre Dame's Pro Day yesterday as well, making some news. He will join us at 1:15. We will hear from Mike Shanahan today. Had some good things to say about RG3, about his advice to Hugh Jackson, his advice to the Cleveland Browns in dealing with RG3. We'll hear from Mel Kiper and Todd McShay. We've got the Friday forecast, and we're going to delve into who the heck is Moritz Boehringer. Is that right? Do I have that right?
I took a few years of German in high school. I think your pronunciation is correct.
Nice. So I've got that going for me today. Because, I don't know, some German football guy who wants to play football, and he happened to run a 4.440 today.
Yeah, but there was a rugby player.
There was a rugby
player. Very good in a Niners uniform.
Do you remember last year with Zagura?
Yeah. He's versatile. What is Dino on the board?
Yes.
Elusive. Thank you, Dino.
Oh, my God. That guy.
Elusive.
You want to talk about hopping on that bandwagon?
Oh, come on.
Zagura's back Monday, by the way. I don't know. He's off in some tropical paradise.
Puerto Vallarta.
Oh, is that where he is?
Yes.
Oh. Enjoying life, I'm sure.
Yeah.
216-578-0850 to get on board with us. It's also a free-for-all Friday. We want to hear from you. We want your questions for Matt and for Andrew. It's your chance to ask him anything NFL-related, anything Browns-related. Tweet us at Browns_daily. When we come back, Eric Hansen from Notre Dame joins us to recap the Notre Dame Pro Day. We'll get to your calls and tweets at about 1:30. And for the rest of the show, it is all you, the fan. This is Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
All right, back here on Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Gibbs, Gribbs, and the Glue. Matt Wilhelm with you till 3 o'clock today. 216-578-0850. You can tweet at the show at Browns_daily. We'll get to your tweets and your phone calls coming up in just a few minutes. Right now, though, we go to the OBM hotline. Eric Hansen, Notre Dame beat writer for South Bend Tribune and co-host of Budweiser's weekday sports beat on WSBT Radio, joins us here today. Eric, good afternoon to you. Thanks for giving us a few minutes of your time. Biggest takeaway from the Notre Dame Pro Day yesterday?
Well, the biggest takeaway was how many people and how many important people were at this thing. There were, you know, as opposed to last year when there was only one guy drafted from the group and he was a seventh rounder, you know, there's probably going to be 10 guys drafted there. So there were 71 personnel from 31 of the 32 teams, a couple of head coaches, a bunch of GMs and player personnel directors. I think the kid that helped himself the most yesterday was a cornerback named Kabari Russell, who was suspended in 2014 and played with a stress fracture pretty much all of 2015.
And of the guys, as you said, the faction turned out significantly from the NFL. Who in particular do you believe they were there to see? Is it the evaluation of Ronnie Stanley? Some people have him close to the top 10, but in the teens. Is it Will Fuller, who could be a riser after, you know, a blazing 40? Or was it just to see exactly how far along Jalen Smith was?
Well, I think people wanted to talk with Jalen Smith. But for Jalen, who was, for people that don't know, he tore two ligaments in the Fiesta Bowl against Ohio State on January 1st, had surgery shortly thereafter, and then at the combine, it was discovered he had nerve damage. His important dates are really going to be April 14th and 15th for the medical rechecks in Indianapolis. But I think people wanted to talk to him at the pro day yesterday. But Stanley, is obviously a guy that's going to go in the first round. Will Fuller's trying to push himself in that direction. They were kind of the main attraction there. There were a lot of offensive line coaches from around the league looking at Ronnie Stanley, who did a couple things. He did his bench press. He re-ran his 20-yard shuttle. And then he did the position-specific drills. And there was a big crowd around the offensive linemen when he did that. But Notre Dame's got a bunch of guys that are also kind of in the second to fourth round range, like Sheldon Day at defensive tackle, Russell, a cornerback, who I mentioned, and Nick Martin, a center, and maybe even C.J. Procise, their running back, who came out early.
Yeah, going back to Fuller, I'm reading that he had a tough time even deciding whether or not to come out, and it looks like it's turned out to be the right decision. What kind of playmaker was he for Notre Dame, and just where do you see him kind of fitting as in the NFL? Like, is he a number one guy? What would he have to find a niche somewhere? What do you think?
Well, I'll tell you, he's not a big built guy. You know, he weighed in at 186 at the combine, 182 at pro day. He's about 6 foot, but he can fly. He was the second fastest player at any position at the combine. He ran a 4.32 40, and really it was a slow wide receiver group. He was way ahead of Liston, B, and Fuller were way ahead of just about everybody else in that group. When you see him play, you know, for Notre Dame on the college level, he was a guy whose elite speed and his ability to separate really opened up the field for other players. So, you know, on a team that even has more firepower than maybe Notre Dame's offense had last year, he's going to get even more catches just because you're not going to be able to pay so much special attention to him. But, I mean, he was a big, big play receiver, a lot of long completions, a lot of touchdowns. The knock against him was drops and small hands, and during the season that was a problem. It's something that he worked with coaches between the Fiesta Bowl and the combine, and he had a very good combine in position drills and looked really good yesterday catching passes from Everett Golson, his former teammate at Notre Dame who finished up at Florida State.
Talking with, Eric Hansen from the South Bend Tribune. He's the Notre Dame beat writer, co-host for Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. Glad to spending a few minutes with him. You just mentioned it, Everett Golson, who says you can't come home, spending yesterday working out at Notre Dame's pro day, and what was the buzz on Golson's day?
It was kind of a weird thing. You know, he was, I think the wide receivers, the Notre Dame wide receivers and running backs were really happy to see him because there was some chemistry there. And he came up a couple weeks early to kind of reestablish some of that chemistry with those guys. So they were happy to have him rather than somebody, you know, that was much more removed from college football throwing to him. But his accuracy was kind of all over the board. During the throwing part of the pro day, one of the Carolina Panthers coaches got a little bit upset with him because he wanted to just throw with two footballs. And he said the other ones were too slick. And the guy goes, "You're going to throw with the footballs we give you to throw." So it was kind of weird like that. But again, you know, Everett's big thing is being able to talk the teams and explain, you know, why he was so up and down in college and why he left Notre Dame and why he didn't go to the Peach Bowl and play with his team, why he missed that for personal reasons. I think people kind of question his heart more than they do his arm, and that's going to kind of be his storyline in getting into a camp and trying to stick on a roster as we get through the summer.
I'm going to take the focus back on Jalen Smith. You walk us through his thought process of entering the draft, and also where do you believe he's going to be drafted, and how much he's going to be missing out on by potentially, you know, not being the number one overall prospect in most people's eyes prior to that injury.
Yeah, I mean it was really weird when he got hurt, because there was even a thought that maybe he should come back to Notre Dame and do his rehab at Notre Dame, wait a year, even if he wasn't going to play, you know, take classes and that kind of thing. But he decided to kind of push through that and declare for the draft and just kind of roll the dice with that. And I think it was a difficult decision for him. You know, he is so breathtakingly athletic, but the thing that scares people is the nerve damage, because it's one of those things. Does it get better? Does it ever come back? And that's the thing. I think most people can live with the fact that Jalen Smith might not play an entire 2016 season, or maybe at all. But what they're worried about is he going to be the same player he was, you know, that was a consensus All-American this past season, and this athlete that would have put up freaky numbers had he been healthy at the combine. That's the dilemma with him, and that's why this medical recheck is so important, because, you know, some teams certainly could take a flyer on him and say, hey, we don't need him in 2016. We'll take the value that he is 2017 and beyond, but that nerve damage could push him out of the first round, which could cost him millions of dollars. Does have insurance, loss of value insurance, that does help him if he falls out of the first round. So, again, right now it's just so fluid, it's really hard. You know, I think we're just better off waiting a couple weeks and seeing what that looks like.
There's been a lot of mention about the depth of this kind of defensive tackle class in this draft, and I think Sheldon Day is one of the reasons why. Is in a normal year, is he a first-round pick, or is he a second-round pick no matter what, how many good defensive tackles are in this draft?
I think he's a second-round pick no matter how many good defensive tackles, and I'll tell you why. On the plus side, he's a guy that can play in the 3-4 or the 4-3. He can play on the edge some. He showed that in the Senior Bowl. You know, he's more of an inside guy. I think where, you know, he pushes himself out of the first round is he's 6'1". He's 293. He's not, you know, as explosive as, let's say, an Aaron Donald, who isn't the tallest of linemen. But he is pretty explosive. I mean, he does have that push in the pass rush, that interior push. So I think he's a really good football player. He's just not the ideal size that some people like in their defensive tackles.
Eric Hansen joining us on the hotline. Sir, appreciate the time today. Keep up the great work, and look forward to talking with you again soon, my friend.
Matt and Andrew, thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
You got it. That's Eric Hansen joining us, the Notre Dame beat writer for the South Bend Tribune, and co-host for Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. Go ahead, because I know you're dying.
What?
I don't know. You wanted to make fun of me.
No, he just skipped you.
That's all right.
You were just the conduit to me and to Matt.
Yes.
That's right.
You are more so the glue than I am.
I am not.
And yet he did not include you.
It's all right. I just bring you in and out of breaks.
It's not a Notre Dame fan.
Pushing the buttons, bringing us in and out of breaks.
I brought up the call.
I wanted to kill Notre Dame. Whatever, man. Whatever.
What's wrong?
No, I'm just not a fan of Notre Dame.
Fair. Who's going to be the best prospect coming out of there?
You know, I only know this because I covered that national championship in 2012 against Alabama. But the guy he mentioned as that sleeper, I thought was great a few years ago, that Kavari Russell. I mean, he sat out an entire season, but he's a great player. And I think that he would have been a higher pick had he not had all those issues with the academics or whatever he was suspended for.
And then he pulls his hammy yesterday running the 40.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a good player.
Yeah.
But I think it's just a shame what happened to Jalen Smith. I mean, people had him. Some people had ranked him as, like, number one on the
big
board.
Him and Ramsey were, like, number one and two.
One and two. And then, I mean, yep. I almost think it's a lock that he's out of the first round. I mean, you've got to be a really great player to get drafted in the first round if you're not going to play that first
and
year.
And that's what I kind of – well, we have that – and I didn't want to go into our player because he may not be aware of EFO, you know, here on our roster and the insurance policy, as you said, that just got paid out here recently. If something like that existed, because EFO was a first round talent, but not a top five pick.
Right. Yeah. I think it was like, I think he was projected as a first or a late first, second round for sure.
Correct.
Yeah. And it's just, he fell all the way to mid seventh, where it was almost. To some, it was a surprise that the Browns even took him in the seventh
right.
round.
And I would think as anybody who knows anything about the NFL game, there are 8 to 10 teams that compete for the trophy every year and everyone trying to catch them or to become the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th team, you know, in that grouping that can actually compete and has enough talent and the everything kind of lines up for them to make that run. You know, and I think the Cleveland Browns, as we all are very well, are 3-4 years away from that run at our division and so on and so forth. But as a team that's going to draft 25 to, say, 35, it'd have to be 31, going to go get a piece that can't, that they're not sure on, that can help them go stay in that window of Super Bowl contender on a guy like Jalen Smith.
I think, I mean, the NFL is so win now to begin with.
Right.
Especially with those teams drafting right at the bottom. They've all got shrinking windows and trying to get back to that spot. Denver's not in a position to where they can just draft a luxury player in the first
right
round. They've got needs to fill in this offseason after losing a lot of players. Carolina's trying to look for that missing piece or two that wasn't there to win the Super Bowl. That's why I think a good comparison is maybe Marcus Lattimore from
right
a couple years
yeah
ago. He turned out to be a mid-round pick, and that was even a surprise. He went that
correct
high, but he would have been an easy first-round pick had he stayed healthy in college.
And just to have the, you know, expound on that conversation, look at the number of names. If the Cleveland Browns wanted to go wide receiver at 32, you know, Will Fuller's a name.
Some people out
you know,
there.
Doxon might be a name. Michael Thomas might be a name. We saw, you know, you saw Sterling Shepard linked to us in another mock draft. Those are four guys that could that are going to get drafted between, you know, 28 and 40 that you would hope are going to be 25 to 40 reception, you know, rookie year guys that could play on the Broncos or play with the Patriots, you know, at some point. And you're going to take Jalen Smith, who, and I think the one thing that he kept saying is the nerve damage. Not so much recovering from an ACL, because that's like having a broken arm in today's world. You know, recovering and getting back, as long as you have the time and patience. But the nerve damage and how bad that is are going to not, he said, scare him out of the first round. That might scare people out of like the first couple of days of the draft.
Right. And I think we're seeing the difference in severity with knee injuries between a guy like Jalen Smith and then UCLA's Miles Jack, who's still
yep
going to be probably a top 10 player. But there's still some uncertainty with Miles Jack, but not as much as,
no,
as with Jalen Smith.
But right even now a guy like Jalen Smith, like, is that a luxury pick even in the second round these days?
I would say yes.
I mean, I almost think he's a day. He might be a day three guy before it's all said and done.
And again, you don't even know what you're going to be getting.
Right. And I think because I think in the first round for anyone who drafts 20 to 31 in this year's draft, it's, you know, they may take, it's all based on your draft philosophy. Do you go, you know, need or best player available? And a lot of those carry over in the second round. When you got a shot to go, do you go best player available in the second round or do you go need in second round? You know, best player available might be Jalen Smith, but he's going to have to sit. But if you go need, he is definitely not on your list.
A lot of decisions to be made.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of the late round picks last year. I don't think that some of these were meant to be guys that didn't play, but a guy like Arizona Cardinals took DJ Humphries. He never saw the field at all last year. I don't think that was part of the plan. I think they wanted him, but I think they quickly realized he wasn't ready. And I think you look at the Colts took Philip Dorsett. That was a really questionable pick.
Out of Miami, right?
Right, but he was still playing last year. I mean, he was a part of their offense. Malcolm Brown played a bunch for the Patriots last
yeah
year. That was a first-round pick, a late first-round pick. So you want something out of that pick, no matter how good your situation is. You always think you can get better.
All right, 216-578-0850. Tweet at the show, at Browns_daily. We want your reaction. We want your calls. We want your questions. What would you do with that number 32 pick? So much being made of that number 2 pick. What would you do with pick number 32? Jonathan in Orlando, we'll get to you and all the rest of you on hold and on Twitter next when Cleveland Browns Daily continues on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Back here with you on a Friday, Cleveland Browns Daily, live from the Dog Bowl in Berea, Ohio. Jason Gibbs, Matt Wilhelm,
hey.
Andrew Gribble. I'm just the guy bringing it in and out of break.
Oh, come on.
Just ask Eric Hansen. He'll be happy.
Sure, he's not listening anymore.
Yeah, exactly. 216-578-0850. Kind of a free-for-all Friday. Want to know what you want to do with the number 32 pick, but we can talk number 2 pick. We can talk draft. Taking your questions for the two experts in this room, and Matt Wilhelm and Andrew Gribble. We start in Orlando, Florida. And Jonathan, welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, brother.
Good, man.
Hey, so kind of going with the number 2 and the number 32 pick, the big thing that I want to see is the Browns actually execute a plan. It seems like all the drafts that we've had prior, there really hasn't been anything in place. It's kind of like, you know, even if you go with the plan of drafting the best player available, we seldom do that. 9 times out of 10, they'll either draft back or they'll draft a need, but it's not like a really extensive need. Like they draft Cam Irving last year because the fear of Alex Mack leaving was technically a need. Well, it didn't really help them last year, and who knows what it's going to do for this year. So if they're going of the route of we need a quarterback and we want the best quarterback available, and they pick that quarterback up at number 2, then they have to get a wide receiver with number 32. Because right now we have no weapons until the NFL gets off of their hands and brings Josh Gordon back. We have no line play, really. We didn't have it last year either, so the running game is going to kind of suffer. To me, if I'm looking at it and I go, well, this is the deepest and best defensive line draft that we've had in a while, get the best players at that position. Like, have a 3-year plan, have a 4-year plan, follow through with it. Like, I understand Carson Wentz and Jared Goff may be the best quarterbacks in a not-so-great quarterback draft class, so do you really waste that pick on number 2 because they're the best of this specific bunch? Or do you get the best players that we have? We have very little impact players, and we haven't had many impact players on the Browns, so I think that's the route that they have to go.
John, thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend. Guys, thoughts on the plan that Jonathan brings to the table?
I agree, and I think it gives many Browns fans the opportunity to get behind something and someone in Sashi Brown and the plan in place that it almost seemed like past regimes didn't have a place. Like they were unprepared, you know, to draft a guy like Johnny Manziel to potentially be your franchise quarterback and yet have all the off the field troubles and all the red flags that we knew existed prior that could potentially be there and really never wavered. So it's just very interesting to me. But I believe in a plan. And the more and more I think about it, and I'll interject this kind of like right now is, and this is where Zagura, you know, coming back prior to draft, you know, always has his analytics and you know, data sheets. What would it take for us to move back, you know, 5, 6, 7? Because I believe there are five very, very good players, 7 including the 2 quarterbacks, that you could draft 7-1 and really have a strong belief in who that player would and the role he'll play here in Cleveland.
That's why I alluded to this yesterday. It's like if you're not in love with either the quarterbacks at number 2, you've got to at least entertain the idea of a trade. Because if you could identify a few of those players, you can get a lot of value for moving 5 spots that early in the draft.
Yes.
You can get a ton of
value. That's
what I
mean. Would it be a second?
That's why, but I only say that if you want the quarterback, you got to stay at 2, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so it's just a matter
of To guarantee it.
You don't want any drama with the quarterback, but I think, as I said, the trade has to be, you would explore that, and I think you explore trades at every one of these spots, but 32 especially.
Yeah, my whole point is, if you are Goff and Wentz split down the middle and feel like you can move from 2 to 5 or move to from 2 to 6 right in front of San Francisco at 7 and get the other one, you know, if you're split down the middle, it's like, oh, if we get Goff, but we can add a second and maybe a future third or whatever that analytic, you know, that data algorithm, I guess you could say, would it come up to on what that value of moving back that many spots would be. I would gain that because, as analysts have said, Wentz fits us because he projects better down the road and he's the bigger guy for the AFC North, but Goff is smarter in between his ears, and that plays more into Hugh Jackson's strength. So I'm kind of 50-50 on it. You know, Tony Grossi, who we had on with Jim Donovan on Tuesday, was 50-50. He's a little bit more Goff, but he goes, I can't knock either. So if
he
we
just wants a quarterback.
Exactly. If we move back, take a quarterback at six, and gain something else to be able to take another pass rusher, a defensive back that's an impact maker, or another wide receiver to add playmakers, I'm all for that.
Strange things happen, though, in this building on draft night, as we've seen
they
in the past.
Yeah.
Things, I think that there is a plan a lot of times, and for some reason, on draft night, things just kind of go by the wayside, and the plan all of a sudden goes away.
When you start talking trades, though, you got to start identifying targets on who is going to be willing to, because that's a big price to pay. There's not many Buffalo Bills of 2014 out there willing to part with that future
first
round.
And not only that, but who's willing to jump you once they see you move back and jump ahead of you to take people?
Right.
Yeah. It's we always talk about the Titans being able to trade that number one pick. It's easier said than done because you got to pay a lot of money to get that number one pick. You got to give up a lot to get that number one pick. That's why I see, especially in this year's draft class, I would be stunned to see the Titans find a trading partner.
I agree.
With that number one pick.
I agree.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Bo in Georgia. Bo, you're on Cleveland Browns Daily.
Hey, guys. I got three little questions. First one, it's about a later round that I've seen on higher in the first round last year, but he must have dropped. Baylor Bears defensive lineman. He's 6'9", 280 pounds. Oakman. Was there drama involved? Why did he drop so low off the radar of a third round pick? And that's my first question. My second question is, when is Josh Gordon's reinstatement? Because I missed that guy already. And third one is, maybe we can trade to, like, six or seven. Well, six. I don't think San Francisco's going to drop anything. But and pick up Ezekiel Elliott and maybe some other stuff. I'll let you go, and you can.
Thanks, Bo. I appreciate the phone call.
Grips, do you have any news on the Baylor guy he was talking about?
Yeah, I pulled up some info on him. He's an interesting guy because he's, like, this is an internet-famous kind of guy because of the way he's built. I mean, this guy's just jacked from top to bottom. But I think the telling thing from his NFL.com scouting report is, first off, his weakness is his body type of a praying mantis with a well-built upper and skinny legs. That's the first
look like
issue.
Tarzan, play like Jay.
And then the bottom line is,
want to follow up,
while Oakman's,
I get yelled at here.
While Oakman's been the cause celebre of national media types, he's always been more of a project than polish at defensive end. So I think that's what it comes down to. With a guy like that, and I think it's why you see him projected in kind of the middle round of the draft.
And no news on Josh Gordon, the NFL.
No, we thought we would get it this week.
I know, and so I would expect it next week. Would you not? Based on Roger Goodell's comments,
this has taken so long. You'd think at this point, but who knows? I mean, you would hope you'd have an answer before offseason workouts begin Monday, but doesn't look like that at this point right now.
And last question that he had about Ezekiel Elliott. I just talked moving back. Ezekiel Elliott to me is one of the seven with the two quarterbacks included. Can't miss, projects best prospects in this year's draft. That's Ramsey, Bosa, Buckner, Jack, two quarterbacks, Ezekiel Elliott.
Doesn't he make so much sense with the Cowboys at number four with their current situation, their potential playoff team? Running backs can make major impacts as rookies. I mean, he makes so much sense number four. So that's why I think if you want to trade back, you can't guarantee on Ezekiel Elliott being there past number four.
And again, that falls into the question, are you drafting for need or are you drafting best available in that situation if for Ezekiel Elliott?
Correct. And I think how much of that changes when you go from two to six, as we just pointed out, who could jump ahead of us? What's the mindset of the individuals? We now have not just one team drafting in front of us. We have six or five drafting ahead of us. What are they going to do? Are they going to pull out the rug from under our plans, which forces us to go best player available because the player we went for need is now gone?
Joe, Tim, Steve, and Larry, stay on hold. We will get to you. We promise today. 216-578-0850. Tweet at us at Browns_daily if you want to get on board with your questions. If you can't get through on the phones, We will be happy, and we will be getting to Twitter here coming up. We will also hear from Mike Shanahan, thoughts on RG3, and Mel Kiper and Todd McShay, all in a loaded Cleveland Browns Daily till 3 o'clock on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
All right, back here with you on Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. The great Jim Brown walking by the window with Hugh Jackson. I think he was in town for the Believeland premiere last night, and then there's also
it's a movie at the Cleveland Film Festival about his AmeriCan program and everything
like
that.
Dude's got an office here. He's going to have a statue very soon.
He is. Man does what he wants.
I would,
got,
too.
Got some time earlier to hang out with his wife and son. Great people and very nice and happy to be here, despite the weather today not being exactly California-ish. But they are here visiting, and Hugh Jackson walking them out right now. 216-578-0850 to get on board with us. Taking your questions today for our experts, Matt Wilhelm and Andrew Gribble. We start
experts.
Up.
Experts. Yeah. Thank you.
Come on, I'm giving you some love. Let's go to Tim in Strongsville. Tim, you're on Cleveland Browns Daily.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Good.
I have a question actually for Andy Gribble, but I have a comment to make also first. I think that a lot of these people are kind of wrong that the Browns have nothing to go with at all. I think Jackson put together a coaching staff, and that's what he's depending on to get everything out of these guys. Because I remember Jackson saying a couple weeks ago, if not a month ago, we're not that bad as we look.
What's your question for Andrew then?
The question for Andrew is, on these guys that are restricted free agents, how long do they have to sign with the team? Because I noticed that I follow the trackers a lot, and I noticed that Solomon and Pastor haven't signed yet, according to the trackers. And I'm just wondering that. Thank you very much. Have a good weekend, guys.
I believe Pastor has,
yes.
And I think that was just a few days ago. I think we slipped that into a release about something else because it's just kind of a minor thing.
When they get back in town.
Yeah, and I think, with these kind of deals, most of those guys take care of business with that kind of stuff. But I believe the restricted free agent period goes, these guys can wait even until, I would think, June or something.
Do you remember?
Like
that. Well, Tashaun did last year.
Right.
With his tender.
Yeah,
it took a
while. So they've got a long period, but I can explain that the reason why most guys, if they haven't signed it, it's just a matter of getting in town and getting it done with. I don't think they're trying to hold out or anything like that.
Going back to the coaching staff, it is nice. I think we've talked about it. It's nice not to see guys wide-eyed, not sure where they're supposed to be, where they're going, what they're doing. That's not the case with this staff. Everybody knows.
It definitely is not, and I've pointed it out before, and I'm not going to say it again, but Nathan and I one day, for fun, added up the amount of NFL coaching experience on this staff versus the old staff. It's significantly different. And what's actually refreshing for me, as I said, with the role that I play here for the Cleveland Browns and the perspective that I have on the club, which is significantly different than the player's perspective, is this staff wants to know you and be known. Whereas the other staff I always thought was being second-guessed, a little to themselves, a little secretive, a little more cliquish, if you will, because of their connection to Mike Pettine, Mike Pettine's father, and, you know, the brotherhood that they had within the brotherhood of coaching, which is a unique setting. So I think this entire staff, coaching staff, is going to be different. I know Andrew and I did a Browns huddle on it. You know, that'll be, on Browns.com or the Browns mobile app. Just even Adam Beard's perspective on putting together the strength and conditioning staff. It's going to be different. The amount of experience that it has is going to be unique. So Hugh Jackson, it's not just Sashi Brown, Paul DePodesta that's changing the way the game is being played. It's this staff. It's the strength and conditioning staff. Things are going to be different here. So I urge all those who've come to training camps in the past and they go, I'm not going because of that. It's not going to be country club anymore.
Yeah.
It's going to be serious. It's going to be intense. It's going to be different. It's going to be physical. This is going to feel different.
Yeah, wrote about this about a month and a half ago, but I just pulled it up now for the two numbers to remember with this coaching staff. First off, 198 is the amount of combined NFL years with this, the 19 assistants that have brought on board. And the number 8, that's how many Super Bowl rings are among that coaching staff of the assistants. The most recent being defensive line coach Robert Nunn, one with the Giants a few years ago.
Back to the phones we go. 216-578-0850. Steven in Dallas. Steven, you're on Cleveland Browns Daily.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, man.
I just wanted to say a comment, and then just wanted a question about what's the coin to Treadwell's draft stock look like right now? I really think this cool receiver kind of reminds me of Alshon Jeffrey, especially with his lower 40 time. I feel like his draft might slip a little bit, which could be good for us because I feel like he's without that bad 40 time, he's probably a top 20 player in this draft. And then I really feel that, so my comment is that I really feel that we should go best player available with each pick because I don't really feel that, you know, we're in a position to go any other route because we need talent. We just need football players. We need, all the talent we can get. And I just have faith in Hugh Jackson, and I'll hang up and let you guys talk. Thank you.
Steven, thanks. Have a great weekend. Laquan Treadwell.
I've seen him anywhere from like 10 to 25.
Yep.
So it's all over the map with him.
He's not a top 10 pick.
Right. I think it's gone.
No.
I think maybe before the season you might have thought he was going to be a top 10 pick. He had a great junior season, but he's kind of fallen in that middle range. And then there's even some debate if he's even going to be the first receiver taken in the draft because I think Corey Coleman of Baylor and Josh Doctson of TCU have had some good off seasons here and impressed some folks. So I would still bet on Treadwell being the first wide receiver off the board, but I think it'd be a mid to maybe even late-ish first round.
So technically, when it comes to the Cleveland Browns, really not part of the conversation because
probably not.
We draft so high and so I guess you could call it so late that
he's
smack
picks.
Dab right in the middle. Yes.
Yeah, you would think. To get Laquan Treadwell, you'd either have to trade down from number 2 or trade up from 32. So it's just I would put it as unlikely.
And here's the thing. I shouldn't count what you do in the combine. I'm not a big fan of I prefer tape, and I'm not saying he's not a good receiver. But if you run that slow without pads and gear on, what do you run with gear on?
The interesting comparison, NFL.com, NFL comparison for him is DeAndre Hopkins, which – certainly, you take that, but
isn't DeAndre Hopkins like a 6-footer?
Yeah, I think Hopkins has got a little more height than that.
Okay,
but I think he's a little smaller than Alshon Jeffrey though. In terms of you're trying to make that comparison,
yeah,
Jeffrey was a bigger guy who definitely didn't run a blazing 40 either.
Right, but you're talking 6'4", 230 pounds, and then and Treadwell's what 6'2", 211,
6'2", 220.
220. Okay,
yeah, so he's a bigger guy. I think he'll be good. He's a guy that produced nonstop at Ole Miss, and with the quarterback play was up and down there, but he was pretty solid. So I think he'll be a good player. I just think he's too probably much of a risk to go top 10 with him.
Yeah, and more importantly, there's a guy that it comes down to the fit.
Yeah,
who's throwing him the football?
Sure, yeah. Sure.
You know, and if he has to be the man or not, is he a better 2 or 3 receiver than he is a number 1?
I would take him in a second as a number 2 receiver. I think he'd be that means you got a really good number 1 to go along with him.
Josh Carr.
All right, break time for us. We're at the top of the hour. End of 1 hour, 1 hour to go here on Cleveland Browns Daily. Coming up after the break, Steven Brunswick will get to you. And then we will hear from Mel Kiper and Todd McShay talking about what the Browns should do with that number 2 pick, especially now that RG3 is in the fold. We'll hear from those guys and more when Cleveland Browns Daily continues on ESPN 850 WKNR.